One of the challenges of traveling is managing your money. If you're tired of getting crushed by bank fees and exchange rates, you need to check out Wise.com. I have been a customer for over 10 years. This is the easiest way to connect all of your finances internationally. It's been essential for me, first as a traveler, then later as a digital nomad and an expat living abroad, running a business from around the world. You get one account, which allows you to send, spend, and convert money internationally, all without hidden fees or exchange rate markups. You can join 16 million customers. Learn how the Wise account can work for you by downloading the app or visiting wise.com/travel. That's wise.com/travel. Thank you to Wise for supporting today's show. This episode of Zero to Travel is brought to you by the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder with 7 drive modes. The Pathfinder's available intelligent 4x4 is built for even the most epic journeys. Learn more at nissanusa.com.
It's something not everyone's really doing. It's something that you normally wouldn't do your first kind of one or two trips to Europe. And it's a different sort of vibe, a different sort of culture, and a different sort of energy.
Oh, I know you're going to want to hear the rest of that from today's guest, Lucas Peters, who is the author of the new moon book, Grand European Journeys, 40 Unforgettable Trips by Road, Rail, Sea, and More. He is an award-winning writer and travel expert. He's here to share his top 7 from the book today, his top 7 grand European journeys. He shares 3 bonus destinations as well. As what's great about these recommendations today that you'll hear is that he's got something for everybody. He showed up with a killer list. He's got something for first-time travelers to Europe, for experienced European explorers, like you just heard that teaser there, maybe somebody that wants to go a little bit off the beaten path, if you will. And he's got recommendations that can allow you to go big, give you time to self-reflect for multi-generational or family trips, best double city hop, and much more. And it's all happening in this show you're going to hear today right now. So buckle up, strap in. Thanks for being here. And welcome to the Zero to Travel podcast, my friend.
You're listening to the Zero to Travel podcast, where we explore exciting travel-based work, lifestyle, and business opportunities, helping you to achieve your wildest travel dreams. And now your host, world wanderer and travel junkie, Jason Moore.
Hey, what's up? It's Jason here with ZeroToTravel.com. Welcome to the show, my friend. Thanks for hanging out, letting me bring a little travel into your ears today. This is the show to help you travel the world on your terms, to fill your life with as much travel as you desire, no matter what your situation or experience. Get your pen ready or your computer ready, wherever you keep your dream list of destinations, because you're about to add to it as Lucas shares some of these grand European journeys from his 700 plus page book. You'll hear also about his experience as a travel writer. We talk about more than just destinations, but of course the core of this episode, the heart of it, is really about giving you some cool new places to travel and some things to consider. And like I said, Lucas brings it with this list. He got a little bit of something for everybody here. Lucas lives in Morocco. He's also an expert on Morocco. He's the Moon Guidebook author for that country. You've heard him perhaps on the show before. And just a couple things before we dive in, we'll link up to his website, but he also has a travel company, Journey Beyond Travel. And they've got deep knowledge on the country of Morocco. And I'm excited to announce here for the first time that we are pairing up to run a trip together to Morocco for Zero to Travel community members. That's you, listeners, here. You can sign up for the wait list over at ZeroToTravel.com/trip. ZeroToTravel.com/trip. There are going to be 15 spots. This is something I've been wanting to do for a long time, to bring listeners together and just have a cool travel experience. You'll travel with me. Lucas might even be able to join us, but he's going to be the one that's putting together the itinerary, being based in Morocco, speaking the language, being such an expert on that country. I was really excited to partner up with him to help put together the first official community trip for the Zero to Travel listeners here and readers of the newsletter and everything like that. So let's hang out. If you want to get on the wait list for that, just sign up for that. Wanted to mention that really quickly before we slip and slide into this episode. Please enjoy and stick around on the back end. I want to highlight one travel tip Lucas shared in this episode, and I'll leave you with a quote as well. By the way, yeah, there are a lot of travel tips here for traveling in Europe, like should you get a Eurail pass or not, stuff like that. So we got much more than just the destination recommendations, and I hope you enjoy the conversation. I'll see you on the other side, my friend. Cheers. I think we're good.
It's always happening, man.
Something's always happening, you know? It's been a hot second. I want to welcome back to the show, Lucas Peters. Welcome to the Zero to Travel podcast, my friend.
Jason, man, thanks for having me on again.
Yeah, man, it's good to see you. Well, it's been a while since we did. I know we've republished the episode you did pretty recently, at least earlier this year. It was great. You're still living in Morocco. We did a whole episode of Morocco, but now you have this new book about grand European journeys, 40 unforgettable trips by road, rail, sea, and more, which is insane, like 700 plus pages. So I thought, well, obviously we don't have time to go through 700 pages today, but we can pull out the best of the best. You can give us your top seven grand European journeys, and then we will, you know, get some of the best lessons from you, of course, and for travel in Europe, maybe some pointers and tips and advice there. And of course, I want to talk about, you know, the easy life of a guidebook writer, man. It's just laid back, right? You don't got much to do. Just hanging out, traveling. No, we were trading WhatsApp messages and you told me you wrote 3 guidebooks in the past year. Is that right?
About 16 months. Yeah. I did an update for the Morocco book. And then I'm on the very last stages of doing our first edition for Andalusia guidebook. So this will be Sevilla, Granada, and Andalusia. And then my publisher in the middle of this, my publisher was, you know, Moon. So Moon's pretty awesome. Great, you know, just fun to work with company. I have a great relationship with everybody from the cartographers to the editors and stuff. And they contacted me and said, hey, would you be interested in this Grand European Journeys book? I had a look at it and I said, wow, that's a monster. I'd love to do this. My first question for them though was like, why me? I'm like your Morocco guy. I've been doing the Morocco guidebook since like 2014 or so. And they said, yeah, but you know, you lived in Paris for a while. You lived in different spots around Europe, you know, previously, and you've done a lot of these trips. We just think you'd be perfect for that. And I was like, wow. Thank you very much. That sounds great. And then we started doing the work and I almost wanted to take that thank you back because the work is amazing. But man, like, yeah, it's been a lot of late nights.
Yeah, it sounds like you were trying to, you're like gracefully talking your way out of it in the beginning. Why me? No, not me. No, not me. I don't. You're like, well, you actually have a lot of experience with traveling to Europe. Okay. And then you're in it. But I mean, I'm looking at this book and I'm thinking, how could you do anything more than just this?
I don't understand, man. So to be fair, so I'm the lead writer on this. So I've done, you know, the heavy lifting on probably about 50 to 60% of the book. But we are like doing a lot from other writers who are fantastic, you know, in the Moon universe. So, you know, there's a lot of other people there to, you know, sort of say thank you to, you know, just, you know, off the top, you know, I think there's 12 other writers. I might be wrong. It might be more, but off the top, I think there's 12 other writers that contributed a lot to this. Like including like my friend Alexei in Italy and stuff, you know, who does a really great guidebook for Rome, Florence, and Venice. And he did a lot like of the heavy lifting for like Italy stuff in particular.
That makes sense. I mean, even still, it's a behemoth anyway, congrats. And you know, for all the aspiring guidebook authors and travel writers out there, can you really make a decent living doing this? It's time to Give it to them. Give them the reality of the sexy exotic job of being a guidebook author.
Yeah, the reality is you have to have a plan, man. If you're you know, if your goal is to only write, which I did this for a few years. I was just a travel writer. You can make a good salary doing it. It is a lot of pitching. It's a lot of rejection, and it's a lot of pre-work. You know. And I think like pre-tour work, right? And I'm thinking to like a trip I did in Iceland in like 2018. So before I went to Iceland for the first time, I'm, you know, contacting people ahead of time, seeing what I can maybe get comped from, you know, like a hotel as an example. You know, maybe I'll write to 5 hotels or 10 hotels and I'll say, hey, I'm this travel writer. I'd like to, you know, stay for a couple of days as I explore. You know, is there a way I can write something for you guys and kind of in exchange for a free stay? You know, there's this sort of thing that's sometimes available. Travel companies as well, a lot of times will sponsor. And then you pair that. So some of your travel is taken care of with some projects ahead of time, right? So you're contacting your, you know, hopefully you have a group of people. If not, you need to have a people. You have to have a network of, you know, different, you know, editors, agents, decision makers that you can contact and say, hey, I'm taking this trip. Would you be interested? Here's an idea I have for you. You know, so come with an idea, you know, come with an idea specific to them. And so what I usually do as a travel writer is I'll have anywhere from 5 to 10 projects, usually per tour, sometimes more that I'm doing. I added photography to that as well. So I do a little bit of photography. Not that it's a big earner for me. It's just kind of a fun way to like spend some time, you know? It's all part of the hustle, right? But you can pair that together and you can do pretty well, you know, like you can clear, you know, 6 figures a year travel writing still today, fairly easily, as long as you do the homework, you know?
What has all the travel writing taught you? Has it enhanced your travels?
It's made them different. I would say, yeah, I'm able to at this point, kind of sift through a lot of the junk that's out there and get to what's interesting to me. And so personally, like I find it a lot more gratifying. Like I value cultural immersion as much as possible when I travel. So I'm able to access that a little bit easier because I know exactly what I'm looking for. And I can kind of sift through the BS, you know, that you'll find. And you kind of end up also with connections now, like where you can pretty easily make a phone call or two and have like a good assortment of kind of activities, events, experiences already lined up before you hit the ground. Or at least I can, I should say. I should not be speaking in second person, but you know, at least I'm able to do that at this point. And it's taken me 10 years or so to get there and I'm still working. You know, the more I know, the more I don't know. You know, that's the other thing is that, you know, you kind of end up, I think, with that touch of wisdom. Like, you know, I've been in Morocco writing about Morocco, you know, speaking the language, living with the people, married into the culture. You know, I got my kids here like, you know, you do over there, of course. And so that gives you certain sorts of cultural access that, you know, you wouldn't have had otherwise. So that, you know, you can lean on that a little bit. But at the same time, yeah, I mean, you find out that there's parts of the country you go to that, you know, you're only there for a day or two, but people live their entire lives there. And with that entirety of life lived there, there's a whole nother kind of microculture there that if you have a bit more time, you can kind of access that too. And so that's kind of what I'm doing now in Morocco and Andalusia, particularly where I do spend a lot of time. It's for me, it's like getting niche-y, getting into like the micro local cultures that I find super interesting.
Particularly when you've been in a place, living in a place for long, because you've been in Morocco since 2009 and immerse yourself in the language and the culture. And we've heard a bit of your story before, so we don't have to go over that. We can link up to the other pod we did. But, you know, just right now, what is the daily life like there for you and your family?
It all, like everybody else, I think dealing with, you know, we have a 3.5-year-old and a almost 8-year-old. And so basically life revolves around the school schedule. And sickness, you know, so like if the kids are sick and home, you know, like that changes your calculus for the day, you know, you kind of build your weeks around the, you know, 9 a.m. to 3 a.m. that you can kind of count them, you know, being out of the house and you have time to, you know, get the work done. And that's, and then school, yeah, of course, the school calendar for, you know, vacations and stuff. So, I think like pretty much everywhere else around the world, we're sort of built around that. But that said, having kids that are still pretty young, we don't mind them taking them out of school for things that we think are worthwhile, you know? So I'll take them out going around the school schedule, you know? So they'll be like vacations or holidays that some of my family back in the US might have that we wouldn't have here in Morocco, or, you know, my friends in Europe might have that we don't have here. So sometimes I'll pull the kids out of school because I think, hey, that's valuable as a culturally immersive sort of activity, or to get to know their grandparents a little bit better, or hang out with their cousins. So, we'll take them out of school still. But we do that, you know, conservatively, not too often. But, you know, that's something else. I think why they're young, like take advantage of that, you know?
I wish school systems were more receptive to that. Of course, it varies, but, you know, there's a cap on how long we could take them out here. And I understand that's to prevent, well, we have a big blend of cultures here in Norway. People from Pakistan, India, you know, all over the world, people come from different countries and live here. And that's like the case with most countries. And then when they want to take a break, I understand it, because you're traveling so far and it's so expensive that oftentimes people want to, I'm the same way. I want to take my kids back and I want to spend like 2 months in America, you know, not like 2 weeks. And they don't want you to do that in the middle of the school year. They want me to do that. They don't want other people from other countries to do that. And so then you're kind of locked into, you know, the sort of the caps that you have, which is a bit frustrating. But at the same time, yeah, I just wish they were more open to it, because there's so much value in not only getting to know your extended family, but also travel, getting to see things, as we all know. So it's we're all fighting the good fight there, man. I mean, no, you know, not really. I wouldn't say that, because I'm so grateful for what the schools do for my kids and teach. I just wish there was a bit more flexibility. And I think it's still, you know, it's kind of like government. I think, like, in a way, the school systems evolve slower than society does in terms of conventions and kind of how much the world's changing, and they can only catch up so fast. Right.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And I do wish sometimes, because, you know, right now my son, you know, 7, almost 8 years old now, he's top of his class. I don't want to brag, but he's, you know, reading at, like, you know, the third, almost fourth grade level. He's a little bookworm. He's like on it with the math, the science, all that stuff. And when we, you know, we just finished up a little family trip to the Sahara. Fantastic. In the Sahara, you can find fossils, you can find rocks. And so he's able to go in and in real life, pick out the rocks, tell us what's an amethyst, what's a quartz, you know, and able to, like, do a weird deep divey thing where he's telling us about the, you know, the quality of these rocks and what they do and their purpose and how they were formed and all that stuff. And that's valuable, you know, and that's something that he's getting through traveling. You know, he's able to put his fingers on it, and there's a different sort of learning that's happening there that I think in some ways is deeper. I think even as adults, when we're traveling, it's that notion of getting to, like, a deeper space of knowledge. I think that drives a lot of us, not all of us, but I think a lot of us, we're driven by that desire to have a sort of deeper knowledge of what's going on planet Earth, you know, what's happening on, you know, over here, over there, places that we've read about, seen on TV or watched in a movie. We want to see that in real life. You know, we want to see that in person, in real life, you know.
Some of those abilities, like to be able to talk in depth about a rock you find or something like that. I mean, you can certainly get that from school, but I mean, there is, this goes for all ages, right? There is something with the experiential learning. You pick up different things, you know. I mean, listen, preaching to the choir here, everybody listening to this understands the value of travel. So yeah, I'm just curious, because you talked about getting to know some of the microcultures where you live and things like that. And I found the same here in Norway. You know, on some level, it's disappointing to say, no matter how sort of much I try to fit in and speak the language and all that, I still at times feel like I'm never going to be totally on the inside. There's a bit of an outsider kind of thing that's always there. And that can be hard sometimes, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I think I've just made peace with it. You know, like, I think having lived the better part of, you know, 20 years, which is almost half my life now, I'm approaching that pretty soon. But I will spend easily over half my life overseas, where I am always going to be a foreigner. It doesn't matter if I speak the language or you know, that my kids were born and raised or speak, it doesn't matter. Like, I'll always have that kind of foreigner tag on me. There's some benefit though to it too. You know, I think that's the other part to it. I think there are benefits. I think at one point I wanted to be that insider. Like, I wanted, you know, like, I was thinking when I was living in France, you know, I'm working on my French, I'm trying to be an insider and everything there. And at one point I realized there's almost a wonderful thing about not being an insider, because you're not expected to adhere to all those cultural norms, you know, and people forgive you, you know, for doing a faux pas, you know, for doing, you know, a little mistake at the dinner table, you know, you touched the fork with the wrong hand or whatever. And you know, like, that's, I don't know, for me, it's kind of take your blessings where you can get them a little bit.
Yeah, totally. You get a free pass in some things. And I feel like that also, I mean, a lot of people that end up living this kind of lifestyle like us, like, maybe there's also an element of appreciating being the outsider in some ways, right? Just kind of like, you know, being like, all right, well, I ended up here because I've lived unconventionally at this up until this point anyway. So, you know, it's just, I don't know, it's just another unconventional thing about your daily life, I guess. It's not quite fitting. I feel like I fit in, but I just, you know, it's like, you don't get all the references and the things, you know, you watch the shows and they can be in the language and you've learned the language, but you don't get the references because you didn't grow up with this, and the joke kind of goes over your head. That's just the way it is when you live overseas, right? You're not going to get it all.
I think that's okay. You know, like, I don't know. For me, maybe it's I've come to a place of being a little bit romantic, but I think there is something to being able to, yeah, just kind of live outside a little bit and not get every joke and, you know, not get all the little references and stuff, you know? You take the little wins when you do get them, you know, when you've learned enough, you're like, I did watch that. You know, I got that, you know,
like nobody passing through would have gotten that, you know, I got that.
Yeah. You know, and I think that's okay. You know, like for me, I think that would have bothered me more maybe 5 or 6 years ago. But I think also like once you have kids and stuff, you're, you know, all of a sudden your priorities kind of shift a little bit. And so, you know, because a lot of that, some of it you do get with your kids though, too, which is interesting, right? So like, you know, because all of a sudden a lot of those, I've found this, I don't know if you found this at all, but like my kids are kind of growing up in this American, French, Moroccan sort of triangle. And we do kid stories in all the languages, right? And so, you know, learning, you know, the stories, the childhood stories that other people in that culture would have grown up with, you wouldn't have necessarily taken the time to study that or to read that or to, you know, identify with that in any way, shape, or form. But because you have this little kid who's 3 and wants to hear a story, or 4 and wants to hear a story, and you're like, okay, yeah, there's this Norwegian story we can do that we didn't have in the US, but who knows, man? Maybe 6 months later, you know, you're watching Who Wants to Be a Millionaire in Norway, and all of a sudden that's the pop culture question, you know? So you get these like little references sometimes through your kids, I think, which is pretty cool.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's one of my favorite things, actually, raising kids here in this country, getting to have like the Norwegian childhood experience in some ways. I've talked about this before. And yeah, like, some, you know, speaking the language, it does open up like all this other art. It unlocks this whole other art scene in a way, if you want to call, which I do, you know, children's books and poems and music and all that stuff. You get to hear it and you get to understand it in a different way. And it's because it's in a different language. It's just different. And I, you know, even I think one of the greatest children's book authors ever is this author that's from Norway, and his stories are from here, you know. Like you said, you never would have discovered it if you weren't living there and having kids there, you know, in that country. And that exists all over, right?
Yeah, totally. The stories, the songs, you know, all these like little, yes, yeah, little things. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah. It's a Thorbjørn Egner is the name of the author, if people are curious. But he's no longer alive, but writes these incredible stories and all the music and everything. And it's just, my buddy and I, who's also American, he's like, this is the greatest children's book author. Like, the universes he's created, it's just so impressive, you know? I don't know.
Better than Dr. Seuss.
Find it fascinating.
On the Seussian scale.
I mean, you know, you try not to compare, you know? I wanted to go to like on a Dr. Seuss rant, like apples to apples, and blah, 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 start like Dr. Seussing this conversation, but... No, everybody's got their own unique thing. But yeah, I don't know. It's just cool to discover art in that way. We'll get back to the interview in just a moment. This episode of Zero to Travel is presented by the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. From muddy jungle paths and snowy trails to rolling sand dunes, the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder has the capability to take you to some of the most epic destinations on Earth. We're excited to partner with Nissan because our listeners know we love to celebrate the joy of exploring the world and finding the best off-the-beaten-path destinations to visit, and there's no better vehicle for that than the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. With 7 drive modes, the Pathfinder's available intelligent 4x4 is built for even the most epic journeys, and it even has the best towing capacity in its class, up to 6,000 pounds, so you can bring the fun with you. But Nissan also knows that it's not just about where you go. In a Pathfinder, the real fun comes from getting there. And that's something we love celebrating here on the Zero to Travel podcast. We believe that life is about finding that joy within the journey itself. And that's why we're thrilled to partner with Nissan to celebrate adventurers everywhere. So thanks again to Nissan for sponsoring this episode of Zero to Travel and for the reminder to chase bigger, better, more exciting adventures and enjoy the ride along the way. Learn more at nissanusa.com. If you love coffee like me, let me tell you how you can get an incredible cup of coffee, whether you're at home or on the road. You can use what I use, which is the AeroPress. Have you seen this? This is a device that uses a patented 3-in-1 brew technology. It combines the flavor benefits of espresso, pour over, and French press into one compact, portable device built for travel or home. The AeroPress has over 55,000 five-star reviews in 60 countries, plus it's the best-reviewed coffee press on the planet. That tells you something, and it makes an incredible gift. Under 50 bucks. Get one for yourself or somebody you care about. Pick yours up at aeropress.com/zero to travel. That's AeroPress, AeroPress.com/zero to travel. Use the promo code zero to travel, all one word, to save 20% off your order. That's 20% off. Thank you to AeroPress for the delicious coffee and for supporting today's show. Now, back to the show. One more thing in Morocco, because I have a buddy that just went surfing there. And, you know, obviously you have all the coastal cities and stuff like that. But it's just one of those destinations where I never thought about going surfing in Morocco, which is never, it's not something that ever crossed my mind because I don't know. I just didn't think about it. And this kind of sparked this question I'm going to ask you, which is, are there some other things in Morocco that people might not think about when they think about visiting Morocco that you would say people should go see or do?
Yeah. So I think when most people, if you haven't started researching yet, if you're like listening to this podcast and you're like, oh yeah, Morocco. Yeah. That would be cool. We should check it out. Most people it's like camels and desert is, and you know, you have some idea that there's some beaches or something, you know, I think that's the general sort of whatever gets put out there by the media. I think a lot of people sleep on the mountain ranges of Morocco. There's actually a ton of mountain stuff from, you know, if you're into like rock climbing to just going for a really nice hike, you know, you have the second tallest peak in Africa, Mount Toubkal, that you can climb in a couple of days. You know, you can get up, it's a really good path to get up there, and you can, you know, summit one of the tall peaks in the world, you know, which is really neat. So I think that's the other thing. I would say, yeah, the surfing. You know, people might think Portugal, obviously, for the surfing is really big. But yeah, surfing and kite surfing are, you know, both of them are up and down the coast, you know, from Tangier on down the Atlantic coast, you know. And with that, there's a boom kind of in these like yoga surfing retreats, you know, where people are doing like a week of like surfing and yoga, like these wellness retreat sort of things. And that's interesting, you know, down around like there's a town right outside of Agadir. Agadir sort of sucks. I don't really like Agadir. It's kind of like a resort package vacation place. Nice beaches, honestly, like nice beaches, but like, yeah, it's like a modern city. It's all built from 1956 on, basically. So it's maybe not my favorite spot, but right out there you have Tejazut, which is like 20 minutes north, which has become like the de facto surf capital. People kind of greet you with like a hang loose there. It's really funny. It's like, you don't get as many salam alaikums. You get more like, hey man, the little hang loose sign. You could be in San Diego there. It's interesting. I think between that, the mountains too is the other one. People, you know, again, for some yoga wellness retreats, connecting with nature. You know, I think that's another one that people kind of sleep on a little bit when they're first kind of considering Morocco, you know?
Yeah. Okay, cool. Thanks for that. I should plug your tour company here, journeybeyondtravel.com. We can link up to it because you do tours in Morocco, actually, which is really cool.
We recently had Rick Steves on tour with us, which is funny because you just did an episode with Rick not too long ago, too, which is pretty cool.
Oh, nice. That's cool. How did that go? That must have been kind of trippy because, you know, he runs one of the biggest tour companies out there and... You know, no pressure
at all. Right? No, you know, like Rick first contacted me because, you know, we're both writing guidebooks and he was updating some Tangier stuff and he thought, hey, we need to hang out. And then he got wind of my company, took a look and said, hey, that's the kind of people I like to travel with. So let's try it out. And he went with his girlfriend and another couple friends of theirs. And we had him on about 10 days in Morocco, hitting like parts he doesn't usually get to go to, like Fez and Marrakesh. And then we went through the Sahara. Unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on how you look at it, climate change is real. And in the Sahara, like they came face to face with the tornado, which has never been in that part of the Sahara before. Like our guide there, who grew up there, who lived there, has never seen a tornado in the Sahara before. And that is that it, that same system I know tore through the south of Spain as well. So our family house up there, that actually got hurt, hit pretty bad as well. So there's this like, you know, pretty bad kind of climate event they got caught in the middle of, and they weren't able to get out to the Sahara. I mean, they were safe. Everything was fine. We kind of changed their tour up, but I felt really bad that out of all the people in the world, you kind of want Rick to have that magical night in the Sahara under the stars so he could do all that really nice kind of promo for it. But instead, he gets the world's only tornado in that part of the Sahara. But he is also one of the world's greatest travelers. So they took it in stride. They were really great. You know, we, of course, kept them, yeah, everybody safe and, you know, made sure the rest of the trip was amazing. You know, Rick really wanted to do the Berber markets, like these kind of local markets. So he got a lot of time at one of the local markets. That he just, for him, that was a huge highlight. Because, yeah, it is just a very local thing to do.
Well, I mean, you never know. That's what travel is, right? You don't know what's going to happen, and you have to, you kind of have to roll with it.
Yeah. So on like one hand, you know, like on a level, I'm like, I'm happy. It's like one of the world's greatest travelers that experienced that, because maybe he will go, you know, do something about climate change with his like million odd followers on Facebook, and he can use that to, as a talking point. But on the other hand, you kind of just want the nice promotion out of it, where it's like, yay, we had a great night, everybody should come, you know? So like on one hand, it's kind of, you know, like on the other hand, it would have been nice to have that. But
I understand you're running a business and all that, but you know, the experience, I guess it is what it is, right? What happens happens, and people will do what they do with it. This goes back to the book Grand European Journeys. And what we were talking about before is like, you know, in a way you're writing, enhancing your travels and saying, okay, yeah, you want to get into that, like inner culture, I guess, as much as you can, kind of submerge yourself in it. And, you know, part of that, I think you have this responsibility, this accountability, right? You're like, all right, I'm going to share some things in this book. People are going to go by these recommendations. They better be something that isn't just, you know, obviously there's going to be some typical things in there, like, oh, visit the Louvre, or like, you know, certain things that people are going to do, and it's going to be very heavily touristed, and that's just the way it is. But also this additional sort of accountability, responsibility of trying to get under the skin a little bit and share some of those things. And I mean, you have 700 plus pages here. So I'm assuming you have a list for us, right? I mean, before we get into that, I kind of wanted to pick out a couple things in the book that aren't destination related. One section you had about the European lifestyle. I'm just curious, what is your take, your general take on the European lifestyle?
My editors made me write it.
So you weren't a fan of that?
I just thought it was too hard to condense in a few paragraphs, you know, because it's like, yeah, what kind of generalizations?
That's why I was curious, because it's like, it's diverse.
It is. It's so diverse. And what sort of generalizations can you make that is like, okay, in the whole, on the continent of Europe, what are the typical differences that you'll find between continental Europe and like North America, right? That honestly took me longer than probably to write than most everything else in the book, you know, just because I find it so hard to generalize. I do much better when I granularize stuff, when I get it down to the minutia. When we're talking big overarching sort of things, I have a hard time seeing that, you know, because I can always find very exceptional sort of things, you know. But for me, the takeaways are, you know, in Europe, one of the bigger ones as an example would be, usually Europeans will take a little bit longer to enjoy their meal, you know, and usually it's a social thing. You know, Americans are quicker to eat on the go. Not to say eating on the go doesn't happen in Europe, but it's much more commonplace to, you know, sit down and have a little bit longer of a lunch. You know, whether you're in Spain or Italy or, you know, Norway or, you know, Ireland, you know, you're still going to take typically a bit more time to enjoy a meal with friends than you would in North America, than you would in like New York City or San Francisco or something like that. So that would be one of those generalizations. I was like, I think that's fair enough. You guys listening to this, don't kill me for it, but that's like the best thing. You know, it was like stuff like that, you know, it's like, man, okay. So I know there's a ton of exceptions, but if I had to generalize, which my publishers maybe do, like this is what I come up with, you know?
Yeah, and that's just the nature of the game, right? Sure. You're trying to take a rich, varied, nuanced experience and express it using words and in, you know, a page or two.
And I mean, imperfectly. And imperfectly doing it difficult with words, too. You know, that's important.
Yeah. It's very, very difficult. So we understand. Thanks for the background on that. The trains, of course, a very popular way to travel through Europe.
That was
one of the life-changing. That was my life-changing trip, going on doing the Eurail thing, solo trip through Europe. My very first proper independent adventure travel type of trip, backpacking. And I'm just curious, based on your research, your experience, when does a Eurail pass make sense versus just kind of buying tickets on the go?
Yeah, so that's something we tackled, and I've done it both ways. I'm at this point, I'm such a planner. I think if you're like me and you're a planner, it makes sense to just buy your tickets, individually as you go along. You typically end up, I found anyway, I typically end up saving money. The only place where I think a Eurail anymore really makes sense is when you do want that flexibility and you're not sure where you're going. You know, you kind of know you're going to be like on the continent for, 2 weeks, because you can buy them in 10 days. You know, you can buy one for a month. You can buy one for, 5 days, I think now. So you can buy different lengths of your Eurail pass at different sort of levels. So you can do, the premium, or the first class or whatever. So you can kind of dictate your level of travel and dictate your days. And then if you didn't know where you were going yet, you just kind of wanted to arrive and see what happens. That's where it makes the most sense to me. I would also probably argue mostly in Western Europe, because the Eurail pass is pretty expensive now, as are the rails in Western Europe. Whereas if you're traveling in Eastern Europe, I mean, it's not that expensive and you can almost always just show up and buy a train ticket. So, I would almost say the Eurail pass, if you're concentrating in Western Europe, if you don't have a plan, but you know the number of days you want to travel, then you buy the Eurail pass. Otherwise, you're probably better just getting individual tickets.
I mean, I'm biased because I've spent a lot of time road tripping through America, but I would say train travel through Europe, road tripping in America, like some of these are some of the greatest ways to travel, some of the greatest travel experiences I've ever had. And I've definitely put taking trains through Europe on that list. It's just so, they're so prevalent. There is so much access. They drop you off in the city centers, beautiful scenery, relaxing, interesting people. It's just such a dynamic, enjoyable way to travel. You know, which brings me to my next question, because the book, you have the 40 Unforgettable Trips by Road, Rail, Sea, and More. And I'm just wondering, as a general rule of thumb, again, we're getting into some of the generalities here. I know this is tough, but when do you think it makes the most sense to plan on renting a car as opposed to doing a train trip in Europe specifically?
Yeah, I find in Europe, if you're primarily motivated by going to larger cities, urban centers, then you'll be served well by the rail. I think road trips are great for when you want to cover less geography. You know, maybe you're doing a little bit more of a deep dive into a particular region or place, and you want to be able to touch on some of those villages, some of this, like kind of local life that isn't accessible by rail. Because as great as the rails are, they're not stopping in every little tiny town and villages. You know, if you want to see the Pueblos Blancos in Spain, you can only get there by car, or I guess public transport. Some buses serve some of the villages, but not all of them. So a road trip is kind of ultimate freedom in a way, in being able to tackle some of that. I mean, I remember my first European road trip was through Italy, actually, a place most people would do by rail probably the first time. But I rented a car in Milan in, what was that, 2002, I think. And I spent 2 weeks just driving around with a couple friends of mine. And that was fantastic, man. And, the price of rental cars is not that expensive. A lot of times you can get a small like four-door sedan in a lot of Europe for 20, 30, euros a day. And you split that between a couple friends and it's even cheaper than the train.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great, man. All right. Well, should we get into this list here? How'd you pick out 7? It's kind of a brutal task, but this is what we do here. It could all change tomorrow, but I'm hoping you ranked these from like 7 to 1, but if you didn't, that's okay. If you did, we can count it down.
All right. So I don't want to give numbers, man. I think it hard enough to do 7, but how I kind of rank them is like, if you've never been, like, what's the, like, what would be your top two or three if you've never been in Europe before? Like, what would be the first sort of trips to consider? And then if you have been, right, if you live here or you have been through Europe, you know, a bunch of times, what's something else to consider? And that's the idea for me, is like, okay, so if you're, you know, a kind of a novice, or you just, you know, you've traveled other places, just haven't hit Europe yet, what are maybe some interesting things? And then on the other hand, you've been to Europe a lot. What else is in here in this book particular for you, but just ideas in general, like, you know, for the next thing. So number one,
I love it, 'cause that covers everybody. That's great.
You know, so, just general, well, like everybody, right? That's everybody, yeah, in between too. But I think honestly, like, if I had to choose just the one, not saying it is the number one thing here, but I think this would be good, not only for a first timers to Europe sort of thing, but I think even if you've been through Europe a bunch, like doing the rail trip from Paris to Bucharest and then continuing to Istanbul, if you can, I think even if you've done that before, if you did that 10 years later, that's still a fantastic trip, because every stop you make along there, along that old, you know, Orient Express sort of rail route, I mean, you can make each city a neat place. Like, you know, like you're going to start in Paris, and Paris is one of those cities that, you know, it's great the first time and it's great the 50th time. It's great to live there. It's great to visit. You know, if you've already seen, you know, the, you mentioned the Louvre early, so you've done the Louvre, you've done the Eiffel Tower, et cetera. There's always something else, you know, there's always something happening in Paris. So you can get really niche there. And I find a lot of people that have been through Paris did have a kind of a positive relationship there, as far as you can have with the city. They end up with their neighborhoods. You know, they really like to go back and get back into their neighborhoods, you know, the arrondissement. And I think that's really, I think that's fantastic. I think being able to do that, and make each one of those stops along the way kind of your own, I think is a good place to start. So I'd say Paris, yeah, do the Orient Express, Paris to Bucharest, go to Istanbul if you can. I think, you know, you're going to stop in, like, you know, Vienna along the way, which is, again, just a fantastic city. It doesn't matter the time of year. It doesn't matter how many times you've been there. Like, you're hitting so many fantastic capitals, you know, that I think that's a good place to start for almost all travelers, I would say, unless you really don't want to travel by trains.
I love it. Way to kick it off. Yeah. Strong, man.
Go big.
That's
go
our
big.
Number one.
Go big.
Or our number seven, depending on how you look at it.
Yeah. that's a good all arounder. It's a good all arounder, right? Yeah. It's but that one for me is probably pretty awesome. And I think the other one that's easy, I think, for a lot of people, like I think about people that maybe only have a week. Like, you live on the East Coast, you're, you know, in Boston, New York, Miami, Washington, Philadelphia, whatever. You have about a week. You can do Paris and London in a week really easy, you know? And if you've never been to Europe and you've never done Paris and London, I think that's
like a double city hop kind of
double city
situation.
Hop, man. Yeah. I think that's that one. I think you kind of nail two capitals. They're cultural hubs, great centers, really fun nightlifes, you know, fun, you know, great restaurant scenes, you know, and just world-class stuff all the way around. And I think if you've never been to Europe before, you pair those two cities and you can do that in a week. And I think that's good. Kind of, you have 1 week. Yeah, I think that's good. You're not moving too much. You know, you're only going to have two Airbnbs or two hotels to, you know, flip back and forth to. And they're connected by the channel, which is awesome too, because I love the excuse to ride under the English Channel on a train. Like, anytime I can take the channel, I will. It's a weird highlight for me.
Nice. Yeah, that's cool. I mean, cities like that, it's you get in a decent location where you can just get out your front door and start walking around. You could pick like one thing to do and the rest of the day just wander around, and you really can't go wrong. I mean, you're going to find an awesome, some cool places to eat. You're going to pass through some cool neighborhoods. I just love wandering cities like that.
Yeah, and they're both great walking cities. Oh, well, nice. Downtown London, maybe not all of London, but downtown London is great to walk around. And Paris, like all of like that kind of central part of Paris is fantastic. So yeah, those are cool. Really good.
All right, so is that your number two recommendation, just to be clear?
I won't rank it number two. Just it is the second recommendation I'm going off
the
of
second.
In no specific order right now, but thinking about the types of travelers.
We'll get back to the interview in just a moment. Here's a quick powerful exercise. If you think about one or two of your big goals, and then you fast forward a few months from now, what can you do right now
to give yourself the best chance of succeeding. If one of those goals for you is learning a new language or even just a little bit of a language to enhance your next trip, you should absolutely get Babbel. They have quick 10-minute lessons handcrafted by over 200 language experts. You can actually start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. It's designed by real people for real conversations, exactly what you want as a traveler. I just downloaded it and went into the Norwegian course area thinking, oh, I've got this. Immediately made a bunch of grammar mistakes that they corrected, and I was like, oh, I've been doing this wrong. So I'm already leveling up and learning, and you can get Babbel now. Here's a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/zerototravel. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/zerototravel, spelled babbel.com/zerototravel. Rules and restrictions may apply. Thank you to Babbel for supporting today's show. Hey, you lovely listener, it's Jason here. And did you know we have a newsletter and it's free? You can sign up over at zerototravel.com/newsletter. You're going to get money-saving tips, destination advice, some musings, little personal updates, all the stuff that you don't get right here on the podcast. And we can keep in touch. So sign up over there, zerototravel.com/newsletter. Get your weekly dose of travel value, totally free. Thanks for listening. Now, back to the show.
And the other one I think about is people that just kind of want to disconnect a little bit. You know, I think some of us, we search for travel for being able to just, I think of it like there are exterior searches, like you're looking for something outside of yourself. And I think sometimes when we say we want to disconnect, we're looking for something inside ourselves. And we do like romantic things around us, but we aren't necessarily looking to get super culturally immersive or anything, but where it's more kind of self-reflection sort of travel. And I think there's two really good ways to do this for myself. One of them is doing like a really nice kind of islandish sort of thing. The other one is a mountain sort of thing. So one's on the water, one's in the mountains. I think if you're like self-reflective travel, it's hard to beat the Greek islands. It really is. Like, I mean, where else would you, sip a cocktail, throw your toes in the sand and watch a sunset and, you know, do some deep reflection on your life to thus far or something, you know, like that to me, like is a good spot to do that. If you need that calmness, if you need that moment of calm, have you ever been to the islands?
Yeah. Just to, Crete.
To Crete.
But had a lovely time there.
How could you not, right? It kind of doesn't matter the island, sort of. How can you not, you know, whether you're, Crete, Santorini, whatever. You know, I think there's a little bit, you can kind of choose your island based on your vibe, what you're feeling. You can hop, you know, through the islands and get a little different feel if you want. But I think for me, like that, the islands are sort of a self-reflective, more of a relaxing, tranquil sort of disconnect. The other one I would say is you choose a fantastic walk. You know, you get off out of your, you know, you get out of a car, you get out of the train, and you're going to say, okay, in the next few days, I got my backpack and I'm walking, right? If you can do a Mont Blanc. So they have the thing they call the TMB, the Tour de Mont Blanc. But if you can do that in the summer, that is you can meet other hikers along the way, and you inevitably sort of will, you know, but you're going to have some great food, more cheese than you probably need to eat, you know, in a week, you know, but that for me, you just being in the mountains and, you know, whether, you know, when you're going from Chamonix and stuff, like you can't help but connect with nature there and thus kind of connect with yourself a little bit. And there are those moments of just introspection that you almost can't avoid. So I love the idea of tackling something like that for kind of like a disconnecting, introspective sort of travel.
Love it. Love it. You're on fire, man.
On four, man.
Is that, are we counting that as 3 and 4?
Three and four. We're going to count that as, we're going to count that as 3 and 4.
Okay. Got it. Okay, cool. Perfect.
Yeah. And now I'm struggling here, man. I'm struggling. If I want to do a... Man, I'm
struggling. Do we need to buy you some time here?
Yeah, can I get some time for 500, Alex? Right. Well, so the other, like, I just don't know what order to put them in. So the kind of going back to the, you know, city travelers. Okay, so let's say you've done Europe a bunch, and you know you've been through London and Paris's old hat, and you're sort of searching for something new. I feel like there's two different vibes you can go with there. I think you can kind of go east or go south. You know, this is kind of my thought a little bit with this. I guess northeast and south, you know, kind of thinking most people have done, you know, if you feel like, hey, I've been to Europe a lot, you've probably done Barcelona, you've done, you know, London and Paris, you've probably hit Italy, you know, Rome, which by the way is great. Rome, Florence, Venice, et cetera. Like, that's fantastic. How can you not love that? That probably should be on this list too. It's not on the list, but it should be. Alexei, I'm sorry, man. It should be on this list. But yeah, I think if you've done like kind of Italy and stuff, you know, where do you go next? And I think for me, the next kind of obvious stuff is to go east and start thinking about Poland, you know, start thinking about the Czech Republic, you know, this sort of thing. So if I was going to do that, and if I had to choose one, man, I'd probably do Berlin, Warsaw, and Krakow. I like that mix for some reason. I mean, I also have Prague, Vienna, and Budapest. But the thing is, if you've done the Orient Express, right, you're a European, like, old hat, you know, you've already done Vienna and Budapest. So I like a Berlin, Warsaw, Krakow. You get some fantastic, like, you know, history up there between, you know, Habsburg Empire and all that stuff. Also World War II stuff. A lot of travelers are, you know, kind of fascinated with the Great Wars. So there's a lot in terms of like Holocaust history and, you know, World War II history in general. But you also have, you know, the general vibe in these cities, I think, especially for younger travelers, is great because it's just vibrant. You know, like, there is a kind of a artsy edge to these places that I don't think you see in a lot of other spots in Europe. You know, they have this kind of like artsy edge to them that's very hip, very contemporary, very modern. And I think if you're I don't want to be like ageist or anything like that, but I think if you're like a 20 something traveler and you've done a few trips to Europe, or maybe it's your first trip to Europe, I think you go there and you're going to come back with something that a typical maybe 60-year-old, or like even me, like a 45-year-old, I'm probably not going to come up. It's going to be a lot harder for me to access that because there's this youthful vibe, this youthful sort of energy I feel there that I don't see. You don't see that in Paris. You know, you don't see that. I mean, maybe in spots in London and stuff, but like you just typically don't really see that in a lot of the other kind of grand capitals that are so worried about preserving a lot of the history. And a lot of, you know, these sort of cities, they're preserving some of the history, but like, because a lot of them were destroyed during World War II, they've had to rebuild. So they're, as they're rebuilding, there is this kind of urge to find the next new thing, you know, and there's that kind of, yeah, I like that, you know, I like that kind of feel to them. On the flip side, the other one I'd put in there is going south. I love, like we were saying, I'm doing this book for Andalusia, but I've been going up through the south of Spain a bunch and doing a trip that's like connecting Sevilla, Granada, and Cordoba, along with maybe Malaga, maybe Cadiz, maybe some of the white villages there. That's another fantastic sort of road trippy. You could do it as a road trip or a rail trip, really, but like that's another one you can do that is, again, it's something not everyone's really doing. It's something that you normally wouldn't do your first kind of one or two trips to Europe, and it's a different sort of vibe, a different sort of culture, and a different sort of energy. You know, there it is preserving a lot of history. You know, you have a lot between the Alhambra, a lot of the cathedrals and all that. You have and you can get into like the megalithic stone structures in Antequera with the dolmens that are like the largest ones in Europe. That's this UNESCO World Heritage Site. That's really cool and totally undervisited. So you get some super ancient prehistory history there too. But at the same time, you have flamenco, you have, you know, the ferias, you have this other sort of energy that even older people go out to, you know, even, you know, that's just what you do. It's a late night culture. And there's this whole other kind of vibe to it that, again, you don't find that so much in, you know, Paris or whatever.
Wow. All right. Super interesting. I love the idea of, you know, the Eastern Europe swing you mentioned and kind of using what's happening in the, I don't want to sound, oh, I guess I sound when I say the youth culture or whatever art scene, you could say, I mean, that's produced by all ages, but it's like in a lot of ways, the art scene that what's happening in that moment in time when you're there, music, art, all of the things you feel when you go into those neighborhoods and you feel like something's happening here, creative, there's some creative energy going on here. And people are creating things and putting them out there is very representative to me of where the place is at culturally in that moment. And that's different than the history, right? You mentioned the history and the historical sites you can see, and those are almost, you know, they're kind of set, right? It's like almost a moment in time that they're capturing and telling a story about, giving you a an experience. And I have to frame it up going through a museum or a culture or a historical site. You know, they have to kind of be able to tell the stories and everything. And that's kind of static in a way, right? You're looking at history in a static sort of state. Whereas if you go to a neighborhood where it's like all of the things that you mentioned, you are looking at the culture, living culture in real time through the art. That makes sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. And that, like I said, there's just that energy to it, you know, like that you can kind of feel when you're walking around, right? Like
the energy. Yeah.
Like
you can't pick up on that unless it's unique, because it's unique to that moment in time. That's what's so exciting.
Yeah. I have an honest struggle to put that in writing, you know, like as I'm sitting here, I'm like, how do you put that into words, you know, in a way? And that, I guess that's the challenge, you know, that's a little bit of the challenge of it, of the job. But, you know, that is something I definitely think about, is like, okay, so here's what I'm feeling. Is that something you can generalize? Would other people feel that, you know, like, and so I try to be really clear, like, hey, that's my impression, but you know, like, and hopefully other people like can access that, and you couch it in a way, you put it in a way that like it becomes accessible for other people to hopefully feel that as well, especially when it's like a good feeling, you know, like I mean that very positively, you know, like that's the vibe, that's the feeling, that's the energy you get when you hit a place. And places are different like that, you know, like I think especially as you visit and revisit and stuff, you know, certain places just have a different sort of, you know, flow to them. And it does depend on time of year too. You know, as you know, like Oslo in the winter is much different than Oslo in the summer. There is a different energy there, you know?
For sure. Yeah. And, but sometimes you just get the sense, if you want to generalize it in a sentence or a phrase, you could say, you know, I don't know what it is, but something's going on here.
Yeah.
There's something here, you know?
Yeah.
I don't really know how else to explain it.
Yeah, there's something, man. There's something. Yeah.
Something here going on. Yeah. Yeah, something special is happening in this moment in time.
Yeah. And I think too,
there's an energy.
Yeah. And I think too, like keeping in mind that travel isn't finite. You know, it's not like you're going to do that one trip and that's it. You're never going anywhere ever again, or you can't come back to this place. You know, I mean, we all have our like time budgets. We all have our money budgets. You know, we're only allotted, you know, 2 weeks vacation, 5 weeks. We only have that 1 month, and we only have X amount of dollars or euros or whatever to spend. So, you know, understanding that, and then understanding, hey, these are places we can go back to. Like I like to think of or expand on, you know, I like to think like, hey, if you, you know, go through Berlin and you're there only for a few days, well, it's nothing saying you can't go back. You know, like if you really like the energy of that place, you can always go back to Berlin, become a Berliner, you know, and and experience that just by itself for a week or two, you know, or a month, or you know, like a, you know, if you are nomadic in your digitalness, you know, you're one of these digital nomads, or you have one of that job you can do from kind of anywhere, you know, you can make that your home base for a month or two, and you know, kind of see what it feels like to live there, you know, to become part of a neighborhood a little bit.
I love
that. I love
pick up
that.
On some of that energy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Just get it, you know, just get it all in. And then, yeah, it's same thing too. Like, I think there is something about trajectory too. So when I was saying like, you can kind of go north, east, you know, or south or whatever, you know, so like you do the kind of central Western Europe, and then there's, you know, if you go east and you find yourself like, hey, you did one trip there and you really enjoyed it, well, go further east, you know, like why not hit up Estonia or get into, you know, there's a really cool road trip I did through Transylvania here that I just, great. You know, I've done it didn't make the book. I did another one through Bulgaria that didn't make the book. But you know, you can do something a little bit further east, or, you know, if you're like, hey, I really like my time in Andalusia, you know, you can go further south. You know, we have a little bit on, you know, Morocco, of course, there. But you can also like explore the Canary Islands. You know, you can also, you know, get into Portugal and the Azores and stuff. So you can, there's another kind of spot that, culturally, as you go in a direction, it all sorts of, if you like that energy there, there's more of that energy if you keep going, you know?
Love it. I like that tip too. It's just kind of, yeah, as you plan your travels, kind of reflect on where you've been and the places you enjoy, and what does it mean if you're going to push further, deeper into that place or beyond? It's kind of a good question. Good something to think about. All right. Was that, we have two left, or did you, are you knocking those out as two?
That's two, man. Yeah. I got one left.
Oh man. We're down to one.
Down to one, man. Okay. Down to one. and you know, I brought this up easy. I'm going to do a little change up here. I think, going back to the first idea, you know, you've been through Europe a bunch. You think, you know, what else can you do, sort of thing. I think, you know, Italy's worth revisiting too. I think Italy, like, if I have to say, I've, of all my Europe trips I've done, I've probably done the most trips to Italy. I think it is so travel friendly. I think there's always something to uncover, always something to explore, always something to do there that's a little bit new. It's always somehow interesting to me, no matter the time of year. And it's a big enough country where you do have, you know, everything from, you know, Tuscany and that sort of thing to the Dolomites and the mountains and the Italian Alps to, you know, great cities like Florence, Venice, Rome, Milan, et cetera. Beaches that are just knock you out, you know. And I think that's one of those places, like, you know, you've been to Italy, you think, oh, yeah, I've done it. Go back, do it again. And then you go, oh, yeah, did it again. That was great. And then you go back a third time and you're like, yeah, I can do this again. And then you're stuck for a travel idea, right? You're talking with your partners. Oh, where should we go? Someone brings up Italy. That's a good idea because Italy's always a good idea.
It is. Yeah. I think I've gone three times now and you're right. It's just, you can't go wrong. I mean, it sounds so obvious, right? Just Italy. Like, I mean, why not? Close it out. Just Italy. It's just like, there you go.
Yeah. Close it. Yeah. Like,
there's plenty.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much to see and do in Europe, but I'd say, like, just saying it, like, top seven sort of thing, like, for a general populace, I don't know that I don't get to talk to, I would say, well, if you've already been to Italy once, maybe reconsider it. If you've never been, you should consider it. If you've been a few times, like, consider it anyway. and just look for other stuff to do you haven't done. You know what I mean? Because, like, I've probably at this point in my life spent, man, probably 5 or 6 months of my life now in Italy. I added it up not too long ago, and I think it was like 5 months and a couple weeks or so. And I still, even with that amount of time, there's so much there I still am excited to do that I haven't got to do yet, you know?
Nice, man. I love it. What a great list. I love how you broke it down to, yeah, that was unexpected to me, like sort of the self-reflection areas. You have like the, I've traveled a lot through Europe, and maybe you should check this out, first timers, going big. You covered it all, man. I mean, this is why you're a professional guidebook writer, I guess. This is what you do, man. I appreciate it so much. And I should mention your website, of course. I mean, we're going to link to all that, but I think it sounds like people can find all the goodies if they go to lucasmpeters.com. And then you got your tour company, Journey Beyond Travel. It's hard to close this out because it got so many awesome places in the book. I mean, this is the Zero to Travel podcast. We can allow a bonus mention if you want, a little bonus destination, if you will. Something you feel like, oh, like, I just wish I could say this one thing. Yeah, let's do a little bonus destination. Can we?
How about we do this? How about this? How about the trip in the book that I haven't got to do that I'm maybe the most excited to do, right? So,
yes.
Yeah. So I've done, I mean, honestly, I've done a ton of these, not quite all of them, but I have done, man, yeah. Like looking at this, there was only like a handful that I hadn't done yet. And so, yeah, man, I gotta say, I gotta do the on the water, man. I gotta do Copenhagen to Oslo, man. I gotta come see you.
All right, here we go, baby. Now we're talking.
No, you know, like I have not been on the northern part of Europe yet. Like, I've done, I think, almost all of continental Europe. Mine is a couple of those, you know, the really, really small countries. But I haven't done, you know, Norway, Finland, Sweden. Like, I haven't touched any of this. None of the Nordic countries yet. So when I was looking at this book, and like, I know we're coming on, I was like, Copenhagen to Oslo, man. I have to do it.
Nice. I love it, man. Well, likewise, I've only been to Marrakesh for a handful of days, and that was my entire experience in Morocco. And I feel like, oh, there was, as I was leaving, I was like, oh, Atlas Mountains, oh, you know, beach destinations, all these things. Just like, oh, gotta save it for another time. We've been talking about that. So, You know, maybe we got to make something happen.
Yeah, we didn't even get into like, I mean, you could say, okay, what are the best ones? If you got like us, you know, young kids, you know, you're traveling with a younger family, other destinations for like maybe multi-generational, you know, you got grandma and grandpa on board as well.
All right, well, I mean, give us two quick ones. You're here. I mean, you know, we don't have to close it out just yet, but that'll be three bonus mentions.
Okay.
A good family. Give us a good family destination and a good multi-generational, like you're getting like grandma and the kids and, you know, the parents and all.
Yeah. Okay. So I think if I'm going to do a multi, all right. So if you're an outdoorsy, like we try to go hiking with our kids a lot and get out, you know, I think the Iceland Ring Road is like a family road trip of a lifetime. I think like doing the road trip, you know, like with your kids and stuff, I think that would be fantastic to do with kids. I don't think you want to bring a baby necessarily, but if you got a toddler, you're good, man. And Icelanders love kids too. I mean, that's another one of those like super friendly, like with kids sort of places. So I think, yeah, having kids along if you're a nature family, that's an awesome road trip, you know, like that's a huge one for me. I think that would be fantastic. If I'm doing multi-generational, right? And so I do this. I travel with my mom and stepdad, and they're, you know, mid-60s, early 70s. And so sometimes we got to build in some nap time. So we just did a big road trip through Morocco. And that was one thing I was kind of cognizant about when I was planning this out. It was like, okay, we got some younger kids. They're pretty active. But, you know, grandpa, maybe he needs a little bit of downtime here and there. So I think no matter kind of, you can kind of make anything, of course, work for a multi-generational thing, but I think you do have to think a little bit more about nap times and that sort of stuff. And also sort of what is the sort of the things that you're going to see that are engaging kind of everybody as much as possible. I don't know. Yeah. That one, you can go a lot of different ways, man. I don't know. I don't want to go back to
Grab one. Just grab one. What's your gut telling you, Lucas? Come on, lay it on us.
Man, the gut's telling me the French Riviera, man. Like, I'm just thinking, like, it's hard to beat the, you know, you got beach time for the kids. If people want to nap and siesta, that's cool. You have that too, right? So you got that kind of mix. There are some great little towns along there. There's wonderful, like, you get into Nice and there's some really, you know, cool little history and stuff there. And I think it has just enough for everybody, and it's easy. You know, I think that's the thing. It's multi-generational. You kind of want to keep it easy. I think sometimes doing a lot of cities is a little stressful. You know, I think you kind of maybe want to keep it with one city and then a lot of smaller places if you're moving around a little bit. That's how we do it, and that seems to work pretty well so far.
I love it, man. I mean, we just turned this into a top 10 list.
Top 10.
I don't know if this is going to be a top 7. I don't know what the title
is yet.
Should we do
all 40 of them?
Top 7 with three bonus with a top 10. Yeah. Yeah. Let's keep this rolling. You guys, listeners, you got a few hours ahead of you. We're going to keep this going. No, man, I respect your time. I mean, 744 pages is what I'm looking at right now of, you know, 700 plus pages of grand European goodies in this book, and people can, of course, either search it or go to the various links, but the book Grand European Journeys, 40 Unforgettable Trips by Road, Rail, Sea, and More. Well done, Lucas. Thanks so much, man. I appreciate having you on, and look forward to having you back again. Who knows what what it'll be for, but I'm sure it'll be another fun one. So thank you.
Thanks, Jason, man. Appreciate it.
There you have it. I want to thank Lucas Peters for stopping by the show. Great guy. What an experienced traveler. The guy's been all over the place, and it was great to talk to a fellow American living abroad, and I'm so excited for this trip we're planning together for the community. Don't forget to sign up for that if you want to join me and a group of awesome listeners like yourself in Morocco later this year. Sign up. ZeroToTravel.com/trip. You can go over there and get on the wait list. 15 spots available, and I'm really looking forward to bringing some incredible people together for an amazing experience, and really excited that we're partnering with Lucas, who you just heard from, a real expert on Morocco, to help us dive deep. And this itinerary looks epic. You're going to get all the details over on that wait list. Again, ZeroToTravel.com/trip. And these are the types of things you miss out on if you're not on the newsletter list. ZeroToTravel.com/newsletter is where you can sign up for that. It's totally free. Okay, no more plugs. Let's wrap this up. First of all, I wanted to briefly highlight a tip that Lucas shared when we were talking about the URL passes, and he mentioned renting a car. He's like, sometimes if you get a group of people together, that is cheaper, and I've experienced that. And one of my favorite adventures from my solo backpacking trip through Europe, the one that really changed my life and opened up the world for me, went down just like that. We were in Spain, and there was nowhere to sleep that was cheap because there was some crazy festival going on. Ended up sleeping outside or staying up all night. I met some people, and we decided to stay up all night instead of go to bed somewhere because that was cheaper, and it's Spain. And we did that, and then it was just like a random fun night with three new friends. And then the next day, we decided to rent a car and take a four-day road trip together. And that was such an eye-opener as well, because I was just so in the mindset of, well, I'm in Europe, I take trains, I have this URL pass. But that's what I wanted to highlight here, is just be open to some of the other things along the way and try not to have that tunnel vision when you're traveling, because anything could happen. You know, you can meet some random people and you realize, hey, maybe we do rent a car together for the day just to explore because it's cheaper. Or, hey, I see a bike for sale. Maybe I buy that and start riding. I mean, you know, anything. And I think the point I'm making here is that your mindset has to be open to that, right? To open to the other ideas and the other potential adventures that surround you. And you never know what those are going to be until you kind of come across them during your trip. So just few things to chew on there. Okay, I'll leave you with this quote. I pulled it out of the quote drawer, which I haven't done in a while. This one's from Yogi Bhajan, who said, "It's not life that matters. It's the courage you bring to it." Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time. Peace and love to you and yours. Cheers.
This podcast has been brought to you by ZeroToTravel.com. Ideas and advice to make your travel dreams a reality.